we talked about it.
Like to call the meeting to order. Please take your seats. A quorum is present. And just in case people are confused, this is the Finance Committee, not the Policy Committee. And Representative Norton has to be away for a few minutes, but when she gets back, she'll take over chairing the meeting, so just people won't be confused. So first, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for January 30th and January 29th.
Okay. Representative Newton moves to approve the minutes for January 29th and January 30th. Is there any discussion? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Thank you. So, on the agenda, we have House File 9, Representative Huntley. And Representative Huntley, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would move that the House File 9 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay.
And I have a delete all amendment, which is DE2.
Yep.
Okay, so Representative Huntley moves that House File 9 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And then you're moving your DE2 amendment, Representative Huntley, to put the bill in the order in which you would like to discuss it.
And yes, Madam Chair, and for the members, what the DE2 amendment does is strictly narrow down what was in the original. In the original bill, we had a lot of things that related to the Affordable Care Act changes that were unrelated to the Supreme Court decision. The Supreme Court decision about one part of the Affordable Care Act said that if we're going to expand MA to 138% of poverty, that each individual state had the right to do that or not do it. We also have, there is other things in the Affordable Care Act that the Supreme Court ruled are okay that would affect, were in the original bill, but now I'm narrowing it down so it just deals with this option to expand medical assistance to 138% of poverty. And there's and there's some minor changes in the that we have to do in how we calculate income that are also in the Affordable Care Act, but that affects the fiscal note for this group of people, so we're keeping that in the bill. And so I would offer the amendment, the delete all DE2 amendment.
Okay, Representative Huntley moves the DE2 amendment to House File 9, and so we'll vote on that and then we'll discuss the bill. So all in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So Representative Huntley, the bill is before us.
And then I have an oral amendment on the DE2 amendment, and that would be on page 5. Line 519, there's a blank dollar amount. And this is a transfer, relates to a transfer of money out of the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund. And we now have the dollar amount from Doug Berg. And the dollar amount would, and I would move to insert on 519, $63 million. Dollars $633,000, and then and that's the amount of money that we're going to transfer from the Healthcare Access Fund to the general fund to pay for the cost of this expansion. Even though we're going to save a net savings of money, there's still a cost to the general fund.
So Representative Huntley moves an oral amendment on line 5.19 of the DE2 to insert the dollar amount where there's a blank there of $63,633,000. Is that right, Representative Huntley? Okay, so we'll vote on that oral amendment then. Is there any discussion to the oral amendment? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Okay, now can I explain the DE2 amendment, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Representative Huntley. Please go ahead.
Okay, there are three groups of people that are being covered by this. One is adults without children. Currently, they're insured up to 75% of poverty. This would send them up to the 138% of poverty. In addition to that, we have some children that are affected by this.
Well, they're already covered up beyond that level, yeah. So they're really not affected.
Okay. They're not affected, but we also have some parents that are affected. I think they're at, 100% of poverty right now, and they would go to 138%, and that's a group we're already paying part of their thing, so that's why there's a general fund expense to this. What's the third one?
Those are the three. Okay. I mean, yeah. One of them is in there. It's just not really being changed.
And I just, for the tape, I just want to note that our fiscal analyst, Doug Berg.
Madam Chair, I'm Doug Berg. I'm a fiscal analyst for the committee.
Okay. Is this been passed out?
Yeah, they have it in their packet.
You all have the fiscal note that Doug has prepared. And if you look at the bottom line, where it's a total cost savings to the state, there's a cost in the up above it in the general fund, but there's big savings in the healthcare access fund because some of these people are already being taken care of on Minnesota Care, and they'll be shifted into MA, which is a general fund expense, so there's large savings in the healthcare access fund. And the total of those savings, if you go down to the, it says total cost savings for the state, for the first biennium, fiscal year 14 and fiscal year 15, there's a net savings of about $129 million. And in the second biennium, there's a net savings of $237 million. Most of that shows up in the healthcare access fund, we're not spending that money. That savings is just going to sit there in the healthcare access fund. And if there's any questions that people have specifically about this amendment, I know there's a couple of other amendments that will be discussed. And I don't know, Madam Chair, if you want to have the testifiers testify first or wait for the amendment.
We were just discussing that, Representative Huntley. I think we should have testimony on the bill first. And then if that's okay with you, I mean, as the author, of course, you know, if you prefer it a different way, we'll do that. But looking at the list, I think we should get to the testifiers and then take the amendments afterwards. So are you ready for testifiers,
yep.
Representative Huntley? So our first testifier is Scott Leitz from the Department of Human Services. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Scott Leitz. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Healthcare at the Department of Human Services. And I'm here to testify in favor of Representative Huntley's bill. Last summer, the Supreme Court made the Medicaid expansion in the Affordable Care Act an option for states, but we believe that this option is a very good one for Minnesota to take advantage of. There's a number of reasons for that. First and foremost, it's coverage for an additional 34,000 Minnesotans. These are folks who don't have any health insurance coverage today, and they're people who rely on the ER, They don't have access to primary care, and they frankly drive up uncompensated care for all of us. And so having those folks covered is the primary advantage of this expansion. But it's also good for state taxpayers because people who are currently served by MinnesotaCare, which the state covers half of the cost of, will transfer to medical assistance under this proposal. And under that transfer, the federal government does pick up the cost of those individuals fully, as opposed to the state paying half the cost for 3 years and at least 90% of the cost thereafter. It's also good for people because medical assistance provides a better benefit set than MinnesotaCare does. In particular, having a hospital cap, which MinnesotaCare currently does for these populations, will go away, and these individuals will be enrolled into better coverage than they're currently in. And because of that, it's good for providers who pick up the cost of uncompensated care for those 35,000 folks who are currently uninsured, and for the people who are on MinnesotaCare but subject to that $10,000 hospital cap that the hospitals frequently have to absorb as part of their bad debt. I do want to make a quick note that by enrolling these people, new individuals, into medical assistance doesn't mean that we're sticking with the status quo. I think the reforms that we've worked very closely, I think the hospitals have been real leaders in joining with the Department of Human Services in our demonstration projects, our healthcare demonstration projects that allow for shared savings and based on total cost of care, is a real reform that we've brought to the medical assistance program. So as we enroll new people, we understand we have to create that system which is more sustainable over time, and I think we're working with providers to do that. So I'm just here to provide support for the bill and to thank Representative Huntley for his efforts on this.
Thank you, Mr. Light. Question from Representative Abler.
We can do questions as we go with that. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
Well, just a couple, Mr. Lights. We had a different bill. So the net change in this bill is 34,000 people. That's the, I think you said that in your testimony. We were looking at 145,000 in the policy committee, and this shrinks it down to the Supreme Court ruled activities, and that's 34,000. Is that the number that's increased under this, Mr. Lights?
$35,000. Okay, Representative, we're sorry. Yeah. I misspoke.
Mr. Lights.
All right. And Mr. Madam Chair.
And Representative Chair.
I have a couple of questions. And so I'm just curious, how many people are eligible that you think aren't going to apply for this? There's always a fall-off number. Did you figure there's 10,000 or so that could be eligible and you have a net of 35? Or do you have any opinion about that?
Mr. Lights.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Abler, I'm looking to my regal fiscal staff to see whether we have a good estimate of that. I may need to get back to you on that. Okay. Well, I don't have that right. The type of mic.
Madam Chair, just one other.
Representative Abler.
And later is fine. I just was curious. I'm just curious about we're doing asset tests and or eliminating those, which I'm concerned about, but. There's no way because we tried to change it and the feds weren't about to change it for the early enrollment population. And it's required under the federal law, and so now we're complying with the federal law. What would happen if we didn't comply with the federal law? Would that, I mean, it's just ironic we have to write some words down to comply with what we have to do anyway. Maybe it's an editorial, but we're really good here in Minnesota. We don't need the help to, some of this micromanaging. But what if we didn't have that sentence in there? What would happen to the bill? Just curiously.
Mr. Lights.
Madam Chair, Representative Abler, you're right that we are good in Minnesota, and we do tend to actually comply, generally speaking. And I think that these are changes that are actually they're good changes to bring people in into our programs and to help them maintain that stable coverage. Obviously, when we don't comply with issues that we need to, we run risk of federal forfeiture and other things that might occur. So that's a risk we have for the state. One thing, Representative Abler, to your first question, is that it's a reminder that there's also a requirement that people have health insurance coverage in 2014, so that also has an impact on sort of how many people don't enroll who are eligible as well. That has changed. That changes a little bit because of that requirement. But we'll still find the information for you.
Right. Thanks, Ben. Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, other questions? Representative Grunhagen has a question. Oh,
thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Huntley and Commissioner Leakes. In a previous testimony the other day, and I'm not sure who shared it, they showed the expanse in the Medicaid, and this would be on these yellow sheets, would be 145,000 Minnesotans, and I assume that includes families and children. And you say, is it 35,000 individuals? Because the first sheet here says the Minnesota Care Demonstration waiver, expand medical assistance, but to 138%, streamline Medicaid. And it says 145,000 additional Minnesotans. Just respond. I just want to make sure I'm using an accurate figure.
Representative, Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen, the 145 on that sheet is the number that if you include all the things in the Affordable Care Act that relate to this expansion. What we're doing in this particular bill today is just that response to that part that of the Affordable Care Act that the Supreme Court says it's up to each individual state. So all we're dealing with here is it would be 35,000, but if you look at the rest of the bill, the Affordable Care Act would be 140-something.
Okay. Representative McDonald. Okay.
Just one quick follow-up.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
So the 145 under the rest of the bill would still include the expansion of Medicaid, though, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe this question is for Commissioner Leitz. Under administrative cost, it says that this bill may carry additional cost to the system, depending on several factors regarding the health exchange. And then the next paragraph, it says this bill may also carry additional administrative costs for training and oversight to county workers. So I'm just curious as to do we have a approximate number on those two key factors that it may carry additional cost to your bill, Representative Huntley?
Who wants to answer that? Mr. Leitz, you know, or maybe Doug Berg needs to come back?
Well, I can. Madam Chair, Representative Leitz. McDonald, you're right. We don't have specific estimates on that. I think we wanted to flag that there may be some additional costs, but we don't have a sense of what those might be at this point in time, but we will certainly come back as we get those estimates available.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then just one follow-up. Representative Huntley, you stated that in your opening statement that this will cost the state at this point $63,633,000, but will save money. And I believe that's because that's the health access fund. Healthcare access fund is going to be transferred over, it says also on the fiscal note. So with the health care access fund transferring over, and it'll sit there for a while, you mentioned, what happens to that pot of money then if perhaps the federal government is not able to guarantee their full support of this financially for 3 years and then 90% after the year following? Does that health care access fund then be transferred over to pay for this expansion?
Madam Chair and Representative McDonald, if the federal government does not send us the amount of money that they have promised to send us, then we will have to address that at time. And actually, Representative Abler will have an amendment shortly that kind of deals with that problem. But the federal government often changes rules in medical assistance, and we always will adapt. In this particular case, if they said, forget it, we're not going to pay 100% for the 3 years, we're only going to pay the usual 50%, then we would have to react to that and change our law.
Representative McDonald?
Well, thank you. Since you acknowledge me, I'll just follow up. Well, Representative Huffman, I think that will be very important. I think we all will recognize that. Because we do things best here in Minnesota, we recognize that. I hope that we will not only adapt, I hope we have that in another bucket that we can already anticipate that since the federal government's $16 trillion in debt and continues to go in debt, that safe to say that the money may not be there, maybe the first 3 years, but every year following, I wouldn't count on it. So I hope that our group, I hope that our commissioners have that contingency in a bucket ready to go so it doesn't cost us more money, and that's all I have to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Huntley, we're doing a changing of the guard. I apologize.
I think we may be ready for the next
witness. Representative Mack, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief question to understand. I'm just looking at Section 4, and this is maybe for Commissioner Lights. If I'm following it correctly, I just want to understand who is exempt from the MAGI income requirements. And if I'm understanding it correct, is it people who are qualified for eligibility based on blindness, disability, 65 or older, and children? Those are the ones who are revert to current ways of determining asset limits and eligibility. Is that correct understanding?
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, that's correct. Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. And for the record, this is Kim Norton. I was told I need to. Representative Norton is now at the microphone, so we'll be clear about that. Are there any more questions for Commissioner Lights? Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioner Lights, I think this is a great bill, and I think it's going to create some new health opportunities for people. I hope as this moves along and as we look at the bigger budget and the impact on us, I hope you're able to, within your division, look at the fact that this is usually a healthier population than we traditionally see in medical assistance, because they tend to be working, they tend to have some characteristics that indicate greater health and an ability to maintain that, and maybe that will have some influence on our MA rates in general in terms of the mix of the patients that are presenting within that population, that you'll look at that as we look at how do we budget in the regular budget for this population and the whole overall MA budget. I think there may be some benefits there as well. Is that possible?
Commissioner Lights.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, obviously we will want to take a look moving forward as we bring in new populations. That does change the current mix of what the health status of those populations are. Sometimes it brings in a healthier population, sometimes a less healthy population, but you're right, that's something we'll need to take into consideration moving forward on the rate setting. So I appreciate the comment.
Thank you. If we're done with questions here, I think we'll move on to the next testifier. Thank you, Commissioner. Mary Krinke, Minnesota Hospital Association.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing 144 hospitals statewide and healthcare systems. I think Assistant Commissioner Scott Light stole much of my comments, but I think he did a good job. So thank you, Scott. So as Scott mentioned, we believe this will be good not only for the patients, not only for the state, but for providers as well because of that $10,000 inpatient hospital cap and uncompensated care. I've looked at these numbers, and they do kind of keep moving around. But I think the way I believe these numbers to be, based on what I've read in the governor's budget proposal, this is the population of adults without minor children. And I'm very sensitive to what Representative Loeffler said at the policy committee, and she is absolutely right. This population does have children, but they're not under the age of 18. Much of this population are women in their 55, 60 years old. So we have to remember this is a population that is adults without minor children. I believe the numbers to be 53,000 people will come over from Minnesota Care and be eligible now for Medicaid. The 34,000 number are people that did not qualify for Minnesota Care who were uninsured. And I think that was what Representative Abler was getting at with the asset test, to be honest. I think the asset test precluded that 34,000 from being eligible previously for Minnesota Care. And the 53,000 are folks that are currently on Minnesota Care. So I think that might add a little bit of clarity to the the numbers. I also want to comment, if I can, my last comment, on something that Scott Light said that I think is really important. We have five of our hospital systems that have recently signed contracts with the Department of Human Services to provide Medicaid services, we hope, in a different way, with better care coordination. And we hope that in the long run, this will provide better service to the population and perhaps in the future save money to the state as well. So it's five of the hospital systems, and also the federally qualified health centers have signed up to do this as well. So I want members to know that while we're very, very supportive of the Medicaid expansion, it doesn't have to be business as usual. We are open and willing to support change and reform in our Medicaid program. So I'm very supportive of this bill, and thank you for hearing it early in the legislative process. So,
thank you, Ms. Krinke. Are there any questions? All right, we'll move on to the next testifier, Dave Renner, Minnesota Medical Association.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dave Renner, representing the Minnesota Medical Association. We are a volunteer professional association representing over 10,000 physicians and physicians in training throughout Minnesota. And we are also here in strong support of this legislation and the expansion of medical assistance up to 138% of poverty. And the reason the MMA supports this is for three specific reasons, and you've heard them mentioned here a few times already. But first and most importantly, very clearly, MA coverage for adults has been shown to improve health. It specifically reduces mortality, improves patients' self-reported health status, and physicians providing low-income patients frequently encounter patients with severe illnesses that could easily have been treated earlier, prevented, and reduced overall cost and improved health status. So first and most importantly, it's improved health. Secondly, as been talked, this is a smart financial decision for the state and does save significant money for Minnesota over the next few biennia. And thirdly, this will help reduce uncompensated care for clinics, for hospitals, other healthcare providers as we provide better coverage. While we do strongly support this bill, I do need to take the opportunity to raise a few concerns, and you've heard this from us before. We do have concerns about the long-term sustainability of the medical assistance program, specifically related to the fee rates, the payment rates that are made to physicians and other outpatient providers. The fact that Minnesota physicians have had their fee-for-service rates frozen for the last 13 years, with a few minor changes for specifically for some providers but not others. And in fact, some have seen 12% cuts in their payments over the last two or three years. And the concern is that this is a program that if we don't address those issues, it is hard to continue in the future. Just last week, we were pleased to hear Commissioner Jessen in her presentation to the Senate talk about how in Minnesota we have 96% of physicians participating in our Minnesota care, our medical assistance program, and we're very proud of that. She also, however, pointed out that we are 47th in the nation in our payment rates in our fee-for-service program. That's third from the bottom in the amount that we pay in our programs. Currently, Minnesota's fee-for-service medical assistance programs are approximately 20% below what Medicare pays. And I believe most of you are aware that Medicare also is significantly below what the private commercial market pays. So while we are strongly supportive of this expansion, we do have concerns that if we continue to expand these programs, at some point we do have to address the sustainability. We are glad to see that Governor Dayton has included a 5% increase in the fee-for-service rates for physicians and other outpatient providers. That is a move in the right direction. It is only in the fee-for-service portion of the program and not the managed care portion of the program. So we would encourage you, as you are discussing those issues, to do at least what Governor Dayton has proposed, and if at all possible, try to find some additional payments, money for the increases. Saying that, however, again, I want to reiterate that we do strongly support this expansion and strongly support this legislation. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Renner, for your testimony. We do have one question. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Renner, I'm really I'm intrigued by what you just said. And, of course, you know, I'm very sympathetic to this issue that you raise and that's been raised before about provider payments. But I'm curious about, you're talking about fee-for-service payments, and especially new members may not realize that's really a small portion of our Medicaid program. And so I'm wondering if you can also talk about the bulk of our people who are in under our program who are covered by HMOs.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they paid perhaps different rates, but maybe you from the provider end can give us a sense of how that compares. Because when you're only talking about this little fee-for-service bucket, I don't think we get a really good picture of that. So can you comment further on that,
Mr. Madam Chair, Representative Liebman, I will attempt to, but it is difficult to do so because of the way our managed care program works. You're right. In Minnesota, in medical assistance, very small portion is still in fee-for-service. However, so and most is through managed care and what's referred to many as PMAP, the prepaid medical assistance program. The PMAP rates are negotiated with the plans plan by plan. And when we have tried to gather that information, we have been told by the plans in the past that's proprietary information. So it's difficult to know exactly what those payment levels are. Our understanding is at least some of the plans use the fee-for-service payments as the base. So they use that as their base payment. In the past, some have added an additional 3 to 5% increase. We have seen over the last 2 or 3 years that those additional increases have also come down as you have been forced to cut the PMAP payments as well. But there are some other health plans that don't use the fee-for-service, and it's really hard for us to get a handle on that. I know the discussion over the last 2 or 3 years, you have asked the Department of Human Services to start gathering more data on that and to start providing some reports. At this point, we don't, and you as legislators, I would argue, don't have a good sense of what those payment rates are because of this complicated way of we do PMAP. So I will agree with you that the fee-for-service is not the best measurement, but it's the one that we know. And we are aware that at least a few of the large plans use that as their basis for their PMAP payments as well, with a small, as I say, 2 to 3% increase on top of that. Even with those increases, it is still significantly below Medicare and what commercial payers pay.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Liebling, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And, I appreciate that. And I think it's really important for members to understand the dynamics of this because, as you know and as you just said, we as legislators don't have a really good handle on this. And I don't believe that our capitation payments to PMAP, to the HMOs, have gone down. I don't think while I've been here we've actually decreased the per capita payments we make. And yet we know that the providers are not getting increases. There's not a pass-through there, at least. And so I just wanted to flag this for members. And when I don't know if anybody has, if you have the number right now, or if maybe Mr. Berg does, about what portion of our MA patients are on fee-for-service as opposed to PMAP. He's nodding. No, he doesn't have that handy, but it is a fairly small portion. Of course, we also know that a lot of our disabled people are in the fee-for-service, so it's not strictly all the same people, and some are managed care and some not. But anyway, it's something to keep our eyes on. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Liebling, my understanding is in the Families and Children program, that's almost exclusively for managed care, other than maybe the first month or two as they're going through. The elderly and disabled portions, however, still are a significant amount of fee-for-service. We can also, on your other point, we have some data that we have gathered over the last 10 or 15 years that has showed constant increases in the PMAP payments, the capitation payments that the state makes to the health plans, and we have not seen those pass through. I will say that the Department of Human Services has been much more aggressive over the last few years in negotiating those payments, and my understanding is there was no increase this year. But over the last 10 years, there have been significant increases, and we have not seen those necessarily passed on to providers.
Representative Grunhagen has a question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, just along that PMAP discussion, my first year as a legislature, I spent about 70% of my legislative career trying to crack that code and find out what the problem was. Because I admit, or what I found out is, we had constantly increasing payments into PMAP, but they weren't coming out on the other end to the providers. So, and there seemed to be this black box where nobody quite knew what was going on, similar to what you referred to. What I finally was able to get from the providers on the PMAC program, and it seemed to be acknowledged by the people who wanted more transparency in the PMAC program, because there's billions of dollars that flow through that, is that the enrollment of number of individuals was growing at the same rate or higher than the additional funding coming into the program. So the result is you were covering more people under the enrollment, therefore the additional money did not translate into additional payments to the hospital and the doctors. Now, there were people who contested that they were, you know, the HMOs were skimming some of that for their own benefit, and that was a big controversy, and we dealt with some of that. But that seemed to be the crux of the matter, is that the enrollment was growing at the and I've got a, I still got a graph in my, I kept the graph that was given on that back in my office, but you know, hopefully that sheds some light on that problem. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think we're going a little bit off topic here, but it's an issue that has been raised time and again, and I know we want to get to it.
Just a quick comment.
Yes, I was getting to you. I promise. Representative Blaine has one more, and then I think we'll move on.
Okay, I just wanted to say that that is not the case. This is my understanding. We give PMAT on a per capita basis, not on a fund that would go and would decrease according to membership. It would increase if there was more membership.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brenner, for your testimony. We appreciate that and your cautions as well. Next, we have Robert Freeman, who was accidentally left from our list. So is Robert in the room right now? Okay, he's over in the Senate. Well, we'll come back to him. Kate Johansson from the Minnesota Chamber.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kate Johansson. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and its 2,400 employers that provide 500,000 jobs throughout the state, and 80% of which are small businesses. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 9 today and thank Representative Huntley very much for his efforts in carrying this important legislation. The Chamber is supportive of state efforts to expand Medicaid and medical assistance specifically within Minnesota, as is fully permitted under the federal health care law. There's one primary reason for it: funding fairness. Minnesota, as we all know, pays a lot more to the federal government in tax dollars than we receive back in state disbursements. And this expansion draws down some more federal funding to offer care to Minnesotans whose care is currently financed entirely by state dollars. Other testifiers have, and certainly subsequent testifiers will, provide more details and depth on the policies surrounding this issue than I can, but I can say that I think their testimony will distill into three primary themes that are benefits of this bill, in that it will provide better health for Minnesotans, a better budget for the state, and better business for our providers who deliver care to Minnesotans so well every day. I do want to be sensitive to the fact that the Chamber does acknowledge concerns that there may be fiscal implications of this bill if federal funding is not delivered as promised. To that extent, I understand Representative Abler has a bill with respect to a sunset provision that Representative Huntley is amenable to, and the Chamber is supportive of that. But more importantly, we're also supportive of ongoing discussions, as Ms. Krinke noted, to continue seeking ways that we can reform these programs to be both effective in delivering care and fiscally responsible for the state. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. And Jonathan Watson from the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Watson. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. We represent the 17 federally qualified health centers in the state of Minnesota. We have sites at 74 different communities throughout the state. We offer care to 185,000 low-income individuals. 40% of those folks are uninsured, and roughly 95% of those individuals have incomes below 200% of poverty. We offer primary care, medical, dental, behavioral health services all underneath one roof. So clearly with those two statistics, we're very appreciative of Representative Huntley's bill here to expand the Medicaid program in the state of Minnesota. And I would just highlight two reasons today. The previous testimony testifiers have spoken a lot to the issues I would talk about. But first and foremost is really for the 70,000 uninsured that we serve, one of the struggles that they do have is access to specialty care providers. If you compare an uninsured diabetic patient at a community health center with one that does have some sort of insurance, that appointment made with an endocrinologist is a lot easier for the person with insurance. We really do struggle with our uninsured in securing these specialty appointments. And left unchecked, a lot of these chronic diseases are one of the primary cost drivers in avoidable hospitalizations or ER visits, we feel. So this coverage is going to make a tremendous difference in the lives of those portion of those 70,000 uninsured that we do serve. The second point I want to bring up is healthcare disparities based on race and ethnicity or based on income. 70% of our patients are from communities of color, and if you look at the uninsurance rates in the state by race and ethnicity, American Indians, Latinos, African Americans, 2 to 3 times the statewide averages, and that's a big book of our business those from those communities. So given the projections we've seen in the governor's healthcare task force, we see tremendous drops in the uninsured rates for those communities of color. That's a part of the solution in terms of really promoting health equity is the coverage piece, so that's why we're supportive of that. I do have one concern, though, in related to Medicaid expansion, and that's the continued issue of adult dental care. We do provide this under one roof, again, at the community health centers, but for a lot of our adults of low income, they are uninsured. This creates a big capacity problem at community health centers. We have 2 to 3 month waiting lists at our community health centers for dental care, and this is often the case because we're the only place that will serve the uninsured for dental care services. So expanding dental care coverage under Medicaid would hopefully alleviate some of this backlog of appointment times for community health centers. And lastly, Ms. Krenke spoke a little bit about this from the Hospital Association's perspective, but she did mention the FQHC demo program moving forward. I just want to reiterate that point that we are ramping up, prepared to serve a lot more patients. In Massachusetts, the experience there in terms of post-health care reform was they saw a 25% increase at the community health centers in terms of patient volume. So we're ramping up in terms of innovating how we're going to deliver care. We're investing in infrastructure. We're investing in staff now in preparation of 2014. So again, thank you to Representative Huntley and the committee for hearing this bill, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what kind of jobs are you hiring in your health area?
Mr. Watson.
Madam Chair, Representative Fritz, it ranges the whole gamut from frontline staff, and we hire those folks from the communities, the often the inner city low-income communities that we serve. We really emphasize community-based organizations, up to additional dental care, dental hygienists, mid-levels. We do struggle with physicians because of the competitive wage we have to offer, so we do rely on mid-levels. Social workers and community health workers is one of the pieces of the puzzle we're finding to coordinate care for these folks, especially with chronic conditions. Investing into that is what we're ramping up for, because we understand coordination of care is going to be key moving forward under healthcare reform.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
And before we move on, I just want to say I appreciate you raising the issue of adult dental. I think that that is a concern. We just heard testimony a little bit ago about the number of physicians, the high percent of physicians that take MA. And that is not true in the dental community, and something we continue to struggle with at this committee, and I think we will perhaps have some bills to talk about that as we move forward. But thank you for raising that.
Thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Just a comment on dental. The Affordable Care Act does not mandate coverage for adults. It would be up to an individual state to do that. We do that with medical assistance right now. We have adult dental care, and the feds do pay half of that. But in the exchange, there's no requirement that adult dental be covered. There is a requirement that in the exchange that children will get dental coverage.
Representative Huntley, I appreciate that clarification. Great. Thank you
Thank you so much.
Matt Burdick is next on the list, and he's with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.
Madam Chair, members, Matt Burdick testifying on behalf of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are a statewide grassroots organization dedicated to improving the lives of children and adults living with mental illnesses and their families. We appreciate the opportunity to join you today to testify in strong support of House File 9. Expanding medical assistance eligibility for single adults would have a dramatically positive impact on the lives of many people who live with a mental illness. Medical assistance is an invaluable program for people living with a mental illness. For many, it is the only way to access the treatment and supports they need. The healthcare system continues to this day to discriminate against people needing mental health treatment and supports. Self-insured plans do not have to cover mental health treatment, and in fact, many individual plans do not. If mental health treatment is covered, the services available vary. Medical assistance, on the other hand, covers a wide variety of mental health benefits, including crisis services, adult mental health rehabilitative services, or ARMS, assertive community treatment, or ACT, intensive residential treatment and services, or ERTS, and much more in what's known as the model mental health benefit set that the mental health community worked hard to be included under the Medicaid benefit set in Minnesota. These services have proven to be amazingly effective at reducing hospitalizations and helping people remain healthy. And right now, for this population of single adults to qualify for MA, they must be determined disabled under Social Security standards. Many people living with a mental illness, especially young adults experiencing the symptoms of a mental illness for the first time, do not want to say that they'll never work again. At the same time, they need to be able to access the services and supports that will allow them to achieve wellness and recovery and continue moving forward with their lives. So for these reasons, we thank you again for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 9. Be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Burdick. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Next, we have Robert Freeman. Who's just walked in the room with Help Partners. Do you need a deep breath, or are you okay?
Actually, I was hoping my computer would boot up by now, but it hasn't. So I don't know if there's other people you want to take in front of me, otherwise I can just run through it quickly.
All right.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for allowing me to testify on behalf of the Medicaid expansion. For the record, my name is Robert Freeman from Health Partners, and I'd like to state that we are strongly supportive of the proposal to increase Medicaid eligibility as envisioned under the Affordable Care Act. I'm sorry, I just ran over from the Senate. I'm getting my 10,000 steps in.
Good for your health to take the step, so we're glad you did.
It is very good for your health, and that's what we should do in this committee. As both a provider and a payer of care, and we feel like we have a unique role as an organization in examining this proposal. We'd like to state that we support the proposal for three reasons. The first reason is that we think it makes sense for members in health. It gives literally tens of thousands of people who have no access to healthcare or access to healthcare that comes with copays and limitations that they cannot afford or can barely afford, and it gives them the chance to have the same access to healthcare that you or I enjoy. From a plan perspective, we certainly understand that not only will it make an impact on premiums in the rest of the market, a positive impact on premiums in the rest of the market, but it also means that many people will not be put into the private market where they can ill afford the premiums or deductibles that other folks may see in their traditional products. And finally, as a provider, and I think this is what the gist of the testimony has been today, although I wasn't here for all of it, we feel that the Medicaid expansion will be particularly helpful in helping the safety net providers, of which Regents Hospital is one, in providing care for these populations. We delivered over $30 million in uncompensated care in 2011 and a similar amount in 2012. We participated in the GAMC program. We were one of four providers to do so. When that program was, the CCDS program, I'm sorry, when the GAMC program was ended, and we lost millions of dollars doing that. We have a long history serving this population, and we're committed to continuing to do so. we certainly appreciate the leadership of Representative Huntley and Liebling and Loeffler and the Representative Allen. I don't know if she's on this committee. And others who signed on to this bill, so we're very grateful to those folks, especially Representative Huntley, and we just want to express our support for the bill.
So. Thank you very much. Are there any
happy
questions?
To answer the same questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Christina Wessel is next with the Minnesota Budget Project. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning. I think Kyle will be helping in a moment hand out some handouts that I brought along as well. But my name is Christina Wessel. I'm the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Budget Project. We are an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits and we provide research, analysis, and advocacy on tax and budget issues that impact low and moderate income families here in Minnesota. And we are very pleased to be here this morning to support House File 9 as amended, which will improve access to affordable and comprehensive health insurance for more than 87,000 Minnesotans by expanding eligibility for Medicaid. We believe that passing this bill is a really essential step in improving health coverage here in Minnesota. It also has great advantages for the state, for health care providers, and for Minnesota families because it will save the state money, result in fewer unpaid health care bills, and improve health outcomes. And some of the testifiers before have touched on some of these points already, so I will skip over them in some ways. But we know that House File 9 will save the state money. According to the governor's budget, this line item for expanding Medicaid up to 138% saves the state $1 billion over the course of 4 years. We also know that House File 9 will mean fewer unpaid health bills. More people having health insurance will help control costs for everyone in the system. And we also know that House File 9 will improve health outcomes. The Department of Human Services estimates that the expansion up to 138% of poverty will help 34,000 currently uninsured Minnesotans access affordable and comprehensive health care coverage. And it will help the additional 53,000 people who are on Minnesota Care right now, but will be able to get better coverage through Medicaid. But there's another group of people, those that are benefiting from the streamlining of enrollment, particularly eliminating the asset test, and that actually is another 65,000 people, Minnesotans, who will benefit from those improvements. But we need to pass this legislation in order to see these benefits. It's important to note that if we fail to expand Medicaid, there will be few affordable options for these Minnesotans. Unfortunately, Minnesota Care is not really a reliable option. While many of these low-income individuals are enrolled in Minnesota Care right now, they often can't afford the premiums or find the limited benefit sets don't meet their needs. And furthermore, the future of Minnesota Care is unfortunately in doubt. Some elements of Minnesota Care do not meet the higher standards of the Affordable Care Act, and the state is likely to lose federal dollars that currently help pay for Minnesota Care. So without significant changes, and a bill was just introduced today that will hopefully work on those changes, but in reality right now, the future of Minnesota Care is in doubt, and it will not be there for these low-income Minnesotans. And the other element is that we know that private insurance in the exchange will be unaffordable for these people. Although some of these individuals will be eligible to receive premium and cost-sharing subsidies in the exchange, private insurance still will not be a viable option. If you look at the family budget for Minnesotans in this income range, they have no income left after paying for essentials like food, housing, transportation, and childcare. They are likely to choose an option in a healthcare plan in the exchange that has no monthly premiums but extremely high out-of-pocket costs. This often ends up as a trap for these low-income people who, despite having health insurance, avoid seeking the needed medical care because they cannot afford the copayments and deductibles. And very low-income individuals with incomes below 100% of the poverty line are not eligible for premium tax credits or cost-sharing subsidies because the Affordable Care Act presumed that they would be eligible for Medicaid. So simply put, failure to cover more low-income Minnesotans under Medicaid would push our state backward when it comes to access to comprehensive and affordable health insurance. We greatly appreciate that the House is taking leadership on this issue and acting early in the session, hopefully before the February forecast, to make sure that Minnesota remains a national leader in health care reform. We strongly urge your support for this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Members, any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Matt Toberin, Minnesota AIDS Project.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Matt Toberin with the Minnesota AIDS Project. I will keep my testimony brief. You've had an extensive list of testifiers today. I also have a handout that should be in your packets or going around about the specific impact of Medicaid expansion on people living with HIV. The Minnesota AIDS Project serves thousands of people living with HIV and AIDS annually, and we serve thousands more of people who are at risk with HIV with our prevention and education services. And I'm here today to add our voice of support for House File 9. The Minnesota AIDS Project envisions a world free of AIDS, and our mission is to lead Minnesota's fight to stop HIV through prevention, advocacy, awareness, and services. And House File 9 will further this mission by providing much-needed medical care for working poor Minnesotans who are falling through the cracks of our healthcare system. This bill will allow uninsured adults with HIV and those at risk for HIV to receive needed care while at the same time saving the state money. Many of our low-income clients are on a variety of state programs, including MinnesotaCare, IMCHA, and the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. By shifting some of these people onto Medicaid, they will receive more comprehensive health care and a more comprehensive set of benefits, and Minnesota will, in addition, save money by transferring these state-funded programs to a federally funded program. Our clients typically end up on medical assistance by the time their disease has progressed to the point where they are disabled and can no longer work. But unfortunately, that is when treatment is the most costly. Research shows that it costs 2.6 times more to treat someone with AIDS as it does to treat someone earlier in the course of the HIV disease. So this is why we applaud your efforts to expand Medicaid, a change that will improve the health of our community and save the state resources at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the testifier? Thank you for being here. Next up, Anna Ashby from the Catholic Charities. Anna, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Ashby, and I'm the Public Policy Organizer for Catholic Charities of St. Paul in Minneapolis. As you know, Catholic Charities is the largest direct service provider in the region, and we serve about 32,000 people annually. With our housing programs alone, we host 1,900 guests in shelter and housing each night. Catholic Charities strongly supports medical assistance expansion. Our tradition teaches us that human life is sacred and that the dignity of the human person is the starting point for a moral vision for society. We believe that every person has the right to meet their basic needs, which includes access to quality medical care. Medical assistance is crucial for the people we serve. In 2012, we opened a new housing facility in Minneapolis called Higher Ground, which provides a continuum of housing options from emergency care all the way up to independent apartments. One man who we were able to serve was Frank, who has a medical condition that often causes many strokes. Because of these strokes, Frank can lose control of his bowels, fall down to the ground, and lose his memory of the last 15 to 30 minutes. When we admitted Frank into Higher Ground, he had no medical coverage. With the intensive attention and hard work of our staff, he was able to enroll in MA and moved into a pay-for-stay bed that offered him some housing stability. Catholic Charities, of course, recognizes the critical connection between health and housing. So without health insurance, Frank hadn't accessed medical care and thus had no documentation of his condition. This lack of documentation meant that Frank did not qualify for assisted living, of which he is in serious need. After 4 months on medical assistance with documented medical care, our staff was finally able to help him move into an assisted living community that actually meets his needs. If he hadn't had access to MA and his health condition had continued to go undocumented and untreated, he would likely not have survived this winter. Medical assistance literally saved his life. Frank is just one person living in poverty who's had trouble accessing medical coverage, but unfortunately, this issue plagues many, many Minnesotans. With your materials, you have a graph from Catholic Charities that demonstrates the percentage of adults with health insurance coverage according to different income levels. So the y-axis shows percentages of people who have health care coverage, and the x-axis shows five different groups of bars representing the United States all the way down to the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Within each of these groups, we have different colors representing different levels of poverty. The darkest blue bar on the left-hand side of each of the groups, for example, represents people who are living at or below 50% of the federal poverty guideline. And the light pink bar on the right side of each group represents people with incomes that put them at 400% of the federal poverty guideline or more. So as you can see throughout Minnesota, and particularly in the metro, people with incomes between 100% and 200% of the poverty threshold are the least likely to have health insurance. So Medicaid expansion, which would provide coverage for single adults living up to 138% of the federal poverty guideline, could help us fill this gap in access. Catholic Charities supports the full Medicaid expansion as originally outlined in House File 9. We also support the passage of House File 9 as amended by Representative Huntley to address a piece of Medicaid expansion at this time. In Minnesota, we have a state legacy of going above and beyond when it comes to access to medical care. We do this because we know that without it, people are more vulnerable to poverty, and because with it, they have a much better chance of building a life in which they can thrive. Thank you.
Thank you. We have one question thus far. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Ashby, I understand that this is the Minneapolis-St. Paul, the Catholic Charities, and the Higher Ground is a a wonderful place that you've built. And I know that many people tonight will probably still be outside sleeping in our Minneapolis and St. Paul areas, but they're also outside sleeping in my hometown of Faribault, Minnesota, down in Rice County, Steele County, and down further southern Minnesota. Well, it's not warmer down there just because we're in the south. And I wonder about, you know, I hope that Catholic Charities has some outreach to us down there. I just before I came up here to begin the session this year, attended an event of homeless of people who have died from homelessness, and they had you know, the cemetery markers as a symbol, and there were too many. And in Greater Minnesota, and we've looked at some sort of housing for them, and I think there are some places available. And I would extend to you the invitation to outreach, and also during that outreach, find the Franks in southern Minnesota that will be enabled to finally have some health insurance and some good care that they need in order to have a more dignity in their lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Ashby. This is really a useful chart, and I've never seen it before. And I think we should all just take a pause and admire how much Minnesota has done, so much better than the rest of the United States, which I think is a real tribute to the fact that 20 years ago we stepped up with Minnesota Care on a bipartisan bill. It was put together by Republicans and Democrats together. And so we really have a good base moving forward. It's pretty stark. I just had not seen that kind of we often see us compared to the nation and when we're falling down, and I think sometimes it's nice to realize we're ahead. The differences between the 7-county metro and the rest of Minnesota in terms of that, do you think that's mainly due to the different costs of living in terms of having disposable income, I haven't really looked at that issue from that kind of a regional basis. Do you have a sense at all of what the main differences are? Is it because of cost of living differences or population composition differences? I'm not sure.
Ms. Ashby.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, I can't answer that question completely, but my educated guess would be that there tends to be a lot more access to medical care in the Twin Cities Metro, and so many folks who are in suburbs or outstate Minnesota are attracted into the Metro because they are in such need of medical care, and so many of them come in. We often see that in our shelters and housing facilities, but I'm more than happy to look into that and get back to you.
Representative Loeffler, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was struck by the fact that as you pointed out in your testimony, at certain levels, there actually is more enrollment statewide than there is in the 7-county metro, which is actually counter to what your educated guess answer would be. That's where I was just kind of surprised, and so
sure.
I was trying to understand that. But we'll all ponder that for a bit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for testifying today. We have one last testifier on my list, which is Rod Halverson with the Minnesota Social Services Association.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rod Halverson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Social Service Association, and we're here today to testify in favor of the bill before you. Our association, MSSA, is a membership organization with 3,300 individual professional members of the human service delivery system in Minnesota and 160 agencies that also deliver human services to individuals in Minnesota. We have a grassroots effort in regard to adopting a public policy agenda, and each year we bring that forward. And this year, one of the proposals in general policy statement number 11 is a support of the expansion of MA, and we will do that for three reasons. One is it will help Minnesotans become healthier. Number two, it's good for the state budget. And three, it's the first major expansion of the safety, human service safety net in Minnesota in over a decade. And we appreciate the efforts of our representatives Huntley and Liebling and Loeffler and those others that co-sponsored this bill. We think it's a wonderful step forward to help Minnesotans in this way. And while I'm thanking people, I want to also thank Representative Abler. During the leaner years for trying his best to try to protect human services when the situation has been very, very difficult as financing. So with that, our association is a strong supporter of this bill and urge your adoption of the bill.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the testifier? Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience who's has a burning desire to come to the testifying table and either in support of or against this bill? Seeing none, I do believe we have an amendment. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A5 amendment. And I think Representative might have a technical change to it, or is that not true anymore?
Madam Chair, and
Representative,
I have an oral amendment which changes Representative Abler's amendment, but keeps the intent the same. And maybe Randy Chun could read my oral amendment.
Mr. Chun.
Madam Chair, I'll read the amendment, and I guess if the oral amendment's adopted, I can give a paper copy to Ms. Horner. So this is an amendment to the A5 amendment. So all the page and line references are to the A5 amendment. Page 1, line 5, delete the paragraph A designation, and delete enhance and insert all. Page 1, line 6, delete under section 2001 of the Affordable Care Act. Page 1, line 12, delete enhanced and insert all. Page 1, line 14, delete enhanced and insert all. Page 1, delete line 16 to 18.
And is everyone clear, and have you marked your copies of the A5 with the oral amendment? Representative Huntley.
What this does is it says if the federal funding for the expansion of medical assistance goes away, then we will, and this would say if all the federal funding goes away. And if it does, then it reverts to Abler's amendment, which says we put the expansion and go back to where we were before the funding.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. I think we have a call first to repeat the changes, and so if we could repeat what we just did for everyone.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, I'll read the amendment again. Page 1, line 5, delete paragraph A, and delete enhance and insert all. Page 1, line 6, delete under section 2001 of the Affordable Care Act. Page 1, line 12, delete enhanced and insert all. Page 1, line 14, delete enhanced and insert all. Page 1, delete lines 16 to 18.
Thank you, Mr. Chun. Representative Abler.
Well, I believe this is consistent with the intent of the amendment, and it may be that the term enhanced is the same as all. But the point is, and the concurrence point that the Chair Huntley and I share, is that if this enhanced money weren't there, we wouldn't be doing this. To do this in the face of no enhanced money would be no Merck funding, no SHIP funding, taking money away from all kinds of community health clinics and other things that would happen. And so the intention here is if the enhanced funding that has been offered goes away, then it reverts to current law. And then that would be a decision we could make at the time about how to handle this population that we're adding. And so with that, Madam Chair, I would incorporate the amendment into my amendment and urge members to support the amendment as amended. Is the word amendment more times in one sentence than that, Madam Chair?
You did very well, Representative Abler. Thank you. Okay, so is everyone clear before we move ahead what we've done? We've just incorporated the oral amendment that was just reread into the, A5 amendment that we're going to move. So Representative Abler moves the A5 amendment.
It's an enhanced form,
In its enhanced form, or all of the amendment, depending on how you want to word that. So all in favor of accepting the A5 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Thank you. We have the A5 amendment before us, and we did have a couple questions. Oh, nope, that's... We adopted the A5 amendment, and I thought we had some need for clarification. We do not. So, Representative Huntley, are we... Yeah, we don't have any more amendments. That's the only one.
Madam Chair, we do have one more amendment.
We do have one more. Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I have the DE1 amendment, and this does take us in a different direction than the expansion of Medicaid. I will say we want to care for those people in poverty, and we're having a difficult time having health insurance. And I believe this will do a better job of addressing that need and also be a better long-term solution than the expansion of Medicaid under the ACA requirements. Two things my bill does, or this amendment does, is it does have an asset test and it does have a residency test. I think based on former testimony, the expansion of Medicaid here, there's no asset test based on federal requirements and also an intent to reside. The result is the concern was raised that that might become a magnet for people to come here to sign up for welfare benefits if we go that direction, especially if there are states that don't implement the Affordable Care Act, which right now there's about 25 that have 30. Well, okay, 25 to 30 at numbers in flux. But with that, there's some technical aspects to the bill. It expands a bill that's already on the books, which is the Minnesota Healthy Contribution Plan, which we implemented last year. And for some of those technical comments, I'd like to ask Randy Chun to comment on them. He'd probably say it more succinctly, more accurately, in a shorter period of time than I would. And then I have a few comments.
Mr. Chun, would you clarify some of these components for us, please?
Madam Chair and members, I'll just, you know, very briefly walk through the amendment. Section 1 would expand the defined contribution program to include adults without children with incomes as low as 75% of the federal poverty guidelines. Right now, the lower threshold is 200% of the poverty guidelines for that group. Section 1 also would expand the program to include parents with and children with incomes greater than 150% of the poverty guidelines. There's also a reference to excluding children if the inclusion would violate the federal maintenance of effort requirements. Some of the MOE requirements relate to premiums and cost sharing. Then Section 2 of the amendment basically modifies the current formulas for the defined contribution to take into account the expansion of the program. And Section 3 would direct the commissioners to seek the enhanced federal match provided under the ACA for adults without children with incomes greater than 75% but not exceeding 138% of the poverty guidelines.
Thank you, Mr. Chun. Representative Grunhagen, did you have any follow-up to that?
Yes, I did. Just a follow-up to the idea.
And I just want to be clear, we have 10 minutes left in the committee, and I think there will be some questions and discussion about your amendment.
Okay. Thank you. The rationale behind this is has several components, and I'll try to summarize them briefly. Number one, by expanding the Minnesota Healthy Contribution Plan, we will help poor people acquire individual policies or MCHA. As we heard before in testimony, the 35,000 people are generally healthy and they're working. So the result is reimbursement rates to doctors and hospitals will be substantially higher than the Medicaid reimbursement rates or the PMAP. They would also be higher than Medicare rates. That would be a good thing for the doctors and the hospitals. So we're creating a program that we don't have to worry about raising in the future Medicaid reimbursement rates. Number two, the individual market would, as I said before, provide deductibles and copays, and that is a check and balance against overutilization. Sometimes, if there's no copay or very little copay or deductible to pay when you go to the doctor or hospital, you get overutilization and therefore a waste of health care assets. The other thing it would do is you say, well, how do we pay for this additional subsidy? Because we won't be getting the 100%. And let me just comment on the 100% quickly.
Quickly, Mr. Grinhagen.
Yep, the federal government's promise of paying 100% is based on basically a bankrupt federal government. Not only are we $16 trillion in debt, we're all familiar with that, Medicare is projected to go bankrupt, Medicaid is projected to go bankrupt, Social Security is projected to go bankrupt. So every federal program is on its way to bankruptcy. This solution would put it on a firm foundation of what we know works today in Minnesota. Okay? We know that MCHA works for people who are hard to insure, and we know that the private market works. So we would be in a much better situation long term, both with payments to doctors and hospitals, as well as a sound program. The other quick comment is this. According to the CBO about underpayments on Obamacare, the CBO and Medicare actuaries project that if Obamacare is fully implemented, 725 hospitals, 2,352 nursing homes, and over 1,587 health home agencies will become unprofitable.
Representative Grinhagen, can you speak specifically to the
table? Okay.
Well, we're not going to get to the table if we don't move it a little bit faster.
Okay, I'll try it real quickly. The other thing to understand about Obamacare, even though all these hospitals, nursing homes, and home health agencies will be projected to be unprofitable, the cost of Obamacare over a 10-year period, 4 years of which it wasn't implemented, has tripled. It's gone from $969 billion, according to the CBO, up to $2.7 trillion. So let's not hook the future health care of the people in Minnesota to a program that is going to bankrupt our health care system with low payments and broken promises in the future. The final thing is we have a manageable uninsured population here in the state of Minnesota. And if anybody has other figures, let them share them. According to what we were told last year, 9% of our population in Minnesota is not insured or signed up in a government program. 6% of the 9% are eligible for a government program but haven't signed up. So we got a 3% problem, and we're taking a federal sledgehammer to the problem. And what hospitals believe that they will gain under medical reimbursement Medicare. And reduced charity care, will in fact lose through the lower payments under the Affordable Care Act.
Representative Fritz, I see that you want to comment. If you'll just hold for one second. Representative Grinhagen, thank you for that. And I just need to say that the thing you just described there at the very end about under-enrollment is exactly what happened with the implementation. It actually increased that of the Healthy Contribution Plan. So I think there's probably some concern about that around the table, and while that's certainly a component of your bill, I'm hoping we can keep the discussion short because that's been in the newspapers and we've all read it. But Representative Fritz, if you'd like to comment, and Representative Liebling as well.
Well, yes, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate the time to comment and to Representative Grunhagen's amendment here, which I certainly do not support at all. And I also want to ask, decorum here about who those people are. When you refer to those people, you're referring to me and you, to all of us. There are no those people. And here's the situation on the asset requirement. I'm 68 years old and received Medicare. There was no asset requirement for me, and there won't be for you either or anyone. And I can take my Medicare and live in any state and anywhere and get coverage. And so for some of you who don't quite understand the Affordable Care Act yet and what it does, that's essentially it's like Medicare. I am too old to get any of this Affordable Care Act legislation, but my children and grandchildren will be able to, and so will yours and those of you who are still young enough. But someday you will be in my shoes and you will have the assistance of the government in health care, because none of us could afford the care that's ahead of us without some help. So thank you very much.
And Representative Liebling, and I would like Representative Huntley to also weigh in on the delete DE1 amendment. Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, you have in your handout a description of what's happened with the Healthy Minnesota Contribution Program, and you can see that there was supposed to be 4,000 people enrolled, and we only have 1,251 enrolled. So what this would do is add more people to a failed program. This program will go away in 2014.
Thank you, Representative Huntley. And you do, I think all of you have that in your packet. Representative Liebling and then Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah,
we got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to, obviously, we don't have time to really debate this. And I think some of it's been said what I wanted to say. I just don't think we want to leave this unanswered because we tried this. We have essentially what is a pilot program of what Representative Grunhagen is suggesting, and it's really a total failure. Also, I do want to point out that his amendment is also using federal match in this. But, you know, this has tried, failed, the things that many of us predicted would happen. In other words, people won't be able to afford to have the insurance at all. Great, you save money. People don't have care. So it's obviously a failure, and we should just vote no.
Representative Grunhagen and then Representative Loeffler and... Is there anyone else?
Madam Chair, thank you. Just real briefly.
Yeah, and then we'll vote.
I forgot to mention how they paid for this. If we didn't do the exchange, okay, which is going to cost the state $54 million a year, and there's no consequence to not doing the exchange, okay? It's a law without consequence. If you took $350, which would buy a pretty good individual health insurance policy in the state of Minnesota, divided it into $54 million a year, you could provide a subsidy to 154,000 Minnesotans to buy an individual policy that would reimburse doctors and hospitals at a higher rate. We're only looking at an expansion of 35,000 and an overall expansion of 145,000. Why, you'd even have a few million left to increase reimbursement to the nursing homes in the area. And finally, I don't consider that plan a failure. I have direct evidence from some agents that many of the people who did not sign up for a plan were actually eligible for group insurance where they work. So we had people on that program, and I can bring agents here to testify, that actually were eligible, and they signed up for the government program because they got a better subsidy. So that's a matter of fact. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, for the public who may not know what this plan is, and we don't have time to explain it, I just would say that I will encourage other members to join me in voting no, because it does the exact opposite of what all our testifiers just testified to, which is the need to reduce uncompensated care and to assure people better access to coverage.
Thank you. And this amendment has not yet been moved. Representative Grunhagen, do you intend to move here?
Yes, I intend to move it.
Representative Grunhagen has moved the DE1 amendment. I'm going to go to -1. Thank you. DE1-1. So all those in favor of moving the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No. The motion fails. We are back on the motion itself, the bill itself, House File 9 as amended. Is there more discussion? Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment on the amendment that you adopted, and thank you for your support of the idea. There's a few technical details that may be worked out in ways and means, so thank you.
Thank you. Representative Huntley, we've got a minute, and if you'd like to take it to make a final closing comment.
Madam Chair, what this bill does is add 35,000 people that don't have insurance to having insurance on medical assistance, which will be a benefit to everybody else in the state because we all pay for uncompensated care with our premiums. And the fewer uninsured people we have, the lower, and for those I think I've mentioned this in this committee before, typical family policy is $15,000. $1,000 of that goes for uncompensated care, so we're already paying for these people. This bill will use federal money to reduce the number of uninsured in the state of Minnesota and save the state money in its total funding and reduce uncompensated care as well.
Then Representative Huntley renews his motion to pass House File 9 as amended and re-refer to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
No.
Aye. The motion prevails. The bill is passed and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. I'd like to thank you all for attending today.
Thank you,
Representative Huntley, and the meeting is adjourned. We do have